Get to Old Navy now for February's biggest style steal. 40% off all jeans and tees. Jeans start at just $18 for adults, $12 for kids. With tees from just $7 for adults, $6 for kids. All jeans and tees are on sale, even your favorite rock star jeans. All jeans and all tees are 40% off right now. Don't miss out. Run into Old Navy and OldNavy.com today. Valid 211 to 221. Excludes in-store clearance jeans and tees. Active license and men's package tees.
Hey, we're going to talk about my favorite topic, being a leader.
There you go.
So I have a master's in it.
She's insisted on starting with that.
Well, don't judge anything I say from this point on. So, don't judge George Mason for that.
That's going to be the opening.
George Mason does not stand responsible for anything that is said at this point on.
Unless it's brilliant. And unless it's, this is your alumni.
Absolutely.
This is Wine with Friends. Grab your glasses and get ready to pop that cork. It's time to catch up.
There we go.
So it's that time of the year again with my company where we go into annual review phase. Mm-hmm. And it's every year, this is a super normal thing. I'm sure you do it in your profession too, of like annual goal setting and evaluation of how you did for the year.
We theoretically talk about how we should do that every year.
There you go. So my company actually enforces it. Yeah. And it's interesting.
The county enforces it too for other people. But
fair. So, you know, I have direct oversight over a couple of people. And so every time this time of year comes around, I always start to get a little philosophical about, you know, what does it mean to be a good boss? What does it mean to have a good boss? And this and that. I thought that would be an interesting topic of conversation is that, and I guess I'll start it off by saying this, and we can go from here. Who do you think you've learned more from in your career, your good bosses or your bad bosses?
Bad bosses.
Why?
I think it's human nature to frequently not see the good things, and we take big note of the bad. You know, like, you will remember a negative comment about you before you will remember a positive one, and I think that stands true, you know, across the board, right? So I learn... I do think it's a little bit of both, right? So I think you do need to learn enough to recognize like, oh, that was good, right? But I do think from forming my own leadership concepts, like for myself, a lot of negative things that I've seen in bosses kind of helps me to see, oh, that doesn't work. Like, I shouldn't do that. And I think some of that is that you get to watch other people experiment. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to learn from your mistakes. Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
A lot of my bosses in my head are like Tim the Toolman Taylor from Home Improvement. It's like you learn how to fix the house by watching what not to do.
I think I've
learned as much from my good bosses as my bad bosses. But the lessons that are like clear and present in my head at all times are all from the bad bosses. Like, I'll give you a great example. Every time there's like a major milestone that my project group hits, I cannot help myself from writing thank you notes to everybody.
Right.
And in my head, I'm fairly certain my employees are like, oh, another fucking thank you note from Chris. And it's like it's just a little card and it's stupid. But the reason I do it is because when I worked at the Department of Energy, the guy who was like, not my boss, but like my boss's 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 boss, like the actual Senate confirmed human being who ran the office I was I got with a month's notice dragooned into organizing this event up in Vermont. And like, I had to set aside my entire portfolio for a month. I flew up to Vermont for the event. It was a giant fucking deal. And then when we got back, I wrote his thank you cards to all the attendees. A week later, I come into my office and there's a thank you note on my keyboard, and it was literally printed from a printer with his name written, and he put his business card in it. So he sent me the thank you card that I wrote to myself.
Wow.
And and I still have it because it sticks out in my head as one of those moments of like, I don't ever want to be that disengaged from my employee's work. Right. That I would send him a thank you card that would actually be insulting.
Right. Right. And so it's interesting though, because I think it is like learning from mistakes and vowing to never do that. Right. But then at the same time, I think you kind of have to have both examples sometimes to be like, I see what you did here and I see what you did here. And I see that what you did here worked. So, I mean, sometimes I think you have to have the bad to recognize the good. Well, I don't know. Bud is the word that came out of my mouth, but bad to recognize, you know, the good in a sense.
I mean, I'm sure that's true. Like, I've certainly had great bosses, mm-hmm. you know, like the boss I have now, I love working for. I had a different boss. My actual boss at the Department mm-hmm. of Energy was awesome. And I miss her daily, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, and I learned a ton from watching her. And it's just like, but it's more about feelings than concrete lessons. It's like part of what I love about the bosses that I've really loved is the culture that they've created.
Right.
The team nature of
dramatically,
culture.
Right.
But I mean, it's like the specific lessons have all come from my shitty bosses.
Right. Okay. So I guess that's true. I guess I could see that. Right. Like individual things.
Yeah.
Versus
maybe it's because all those individual moments when I was so pissed off stick out in my head, but I don't have specific examples from the people. It's just like a feeling of the good ones.
Right. Maybe that's it. It is more difficult when they are good, right, to recognize like why are they good? Like what is it that they are doing that makes this good? And I actually think things like thank you notes or recognition of people's hard work is huge in creating, and it can be simple things. Like honestly, you like buy me a sandwich from Subway one day because like I did a good job on something goes a long way. Even like put just acknowledgement of people's hard work matters. That like that cultural makes a huge difference in people's work ethic.
So what are some of the things that you it's two separate questions. What are some of the things you look for in a good boss versus what are some of the things you want to be as a good boss? Or and I can broaden this far more of like mm-hmm. from employment to just leadership.
Leadership. Yeah. I mean, because I think a lot of my leadership experience has actually come outside of work.
That's true for me too.
Yeah. So I think what do I look for in a good leader? I think someone that people actually listen to and take seriously. So I think some of that comes from, so someone who is willing to do the work that I'm doing isn't necessarily doing it because like, that's not necessarily their job, but understanding that you would and could, you have the capability to step into the trenches with me and do the work with me. Right. Like, I think that is huge.
That's true.
Right. So when I have someone in a leadership role above me that I think honestly has no idea what I do and I fundamentally think couldn't do the job that I do, then you lose a lot of respect in my mind. Like,
so I agree with you if they think they can still do your job. Like there's some people who report up to me who I can't do their job, I tell them I can't do their job and I appreciate
that. Right.
Them
okay.
It.
So, right. So then that's where the difference is. If you are honest about that, right? Like, yeah. So if I were to become a principal and I went into say a chemistry or a physics classroom, I would fully acknowledge like, I don't have the content knowledge to be in this room and judge you on the content of your lessons. But what I can do is judge you on your management, judge you on engagement, judge you on all of these other things. This is where my expertise. So I think when you're honest about that, then that makes a difference. So I guess that's really what it is to say, don't be unrealistic in what you can and cannot do. So as a boss, if you acknowledge that you can't do what I do and that you thank me for the job that I'm doing, cool. I'm fine with that. But also your willingness to acknowledge that and your willingness to try to understand or be a part of that is huge. So that's one of the major things, I think. I think another thing as a leader that I look for is kind of respecting people's humanity and not that we are robots, right? Like being
what do you mean when you say that?
So the people have lives and people have boundaries that you should respect. You know, like work is work. Cool. Like if we're sitting at work, you should have the expectation that I am sitting there doing my work, right? You should have the expectation that I'm not goofing off and walking around and hanging out with people or just sitting on social media all day or, you know, sitting on Amazon, right? Not to say that people don't do that at work, right? Like not to say that I've never done that at work, but you know what I'm saying? But then having respect for the fact that when I go home, I'm at home, that I can choose to do work at home if I so choose, but you cannot put an expectation on me to say your loyalty is here, not to your family and not to your home life. Right. So I think, bosses that respect boundaries, that's important, I think.
Okay.
And respecting that, you know, loyalty to work is great, but also recognizing that, you know, maybe you have other things in your life that are also important. So
that's fair.
So those are two big ones for me. What about you?
Well, I agree with everything you just said. Yeah. But to be different, I guess
that's shocking and unusual.
I know, right? It's way off brand. You know, one thing that actually comes to my head, and I'm going to ramble to get to this because it's also on brand. I've been in a number of the places, either in my work professional life or my volunteer life, in other organizations I've gotten involved in. I've started moving up leadership ladders in both places, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I've found that was actually a very challenging transition for me to get over is that, especially in the early part of my career, I was like the backstop. And part of it is because is that I fault my parents, but they seem to have engraved into my brain that failure is not an option. So like I have unhealthy level of need to succeed.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So
I got you. Maybe it's the Midwest thing.
But maybe it is. the way that manifests professionally is that people would drop something on my desk, and no matter how horrifically annoying it was, I was the guy who solved the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, it was because I just took it and I ran with it. But as you move up leadership levels, it's not it's less about executing the work yourself and more about managing and empowering the team to come to a success at the end. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I have struggled with and had to like really consciously focus on is not being like, this is how I would solve it, so go do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about looking at the whole, it's more about looking at the whole thing and saying, we're at point A, we need to get to point B. Let's have some discussions about what path we want to take, mm-hmm. and allowing consensus to drive to point B.
That's leadership versus management.
Yeah. And that's part, right. I guess that's part of what I struggle with is that like, there are a lot of places in my job where I have to define the path,
mm-hmm.
but even along the path, I have to like, there's so many turns and twists and things like that. And you have to get consensus and agreement all along the way.
And that feeds the culture. I mean, right? Like yeah. that culture that you said earlier was so important is consensus building creates a culture in which everybody feels like their voice has value. And yeah. then they are more, you know, loyal to the work. They're more ingrained in what's going on and they feel like they're a part of it as opposed to cogs in a wheel.
Yeah. So I guess the thing that I look for, or at least the thing that I have seen done well and respect, so I want to be able to do that myself as well, mm-hmm. is that consensus building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it.
Right.
And that's really, really hard to do. And I think I've in some ways succeeded at that. I have what some might call an overwhelming personality. So I tend to
have that personality too.
Exactly. So it's like, I tend to like, my instinct is just to like ram it through.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really had to learn to recognize when I'm going down that path and stop myself.
Right. I also struggle with the exact same thing to be like, no, you need to listen to other people. Yeah.
Cause when bosses did it to me,
I don't like it.
It drove me crazy.
I do not like it.
Absolutely drove me crazy.
When you tell me what to do, and you don't tell me why, and you don't give me a chance to voice my opinion, you're going to get meet with a lot more resistance.
And when me voicing my opinion is a rubber stamp, not an actual like listening and taking it seriously, that's just as bad.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess my point is that I've learned that the skills that I developed at the beginning in at least just building my expertise were important. But some of this, yeah, as in all things, you develop some bad habits.
Right.
Yeah. And there, the experience to me of moving from observing leadership and management to doing leadership and management, it's a huge difference. And I've had to unlearn some bad habits.
And yeah, so like, I think part of being both a doer and a leader is the inclination to just like get it done and just do it and then and not ask for other input. And then in the end, I think that's problematic because you end up with people who may have come to the exact same conclusion on how to do it as you did, but now they don't feel like they were included in the decision-making process, even though your goal was just to have it done so nobody else had to deal with it. Like, yeah. So it's funny because I think I've grown a bit in that I am now uncomfortable with people who just rubber stamp what I want to do just because I said it, which I've experienced, like, not at work, but outside of work with other leadership roles that I've had is that, you know, I present an option and then everybody votes and that's the option we go with. But did you think about it or did like you just say Sarah came up with it and put thought into it, so we're just going to trust her opinion? Which, you know, in the one sense, I'm like, oh yeah, everybody trusts me, right? But then on the other hand, I'm like, but I don't know what I'm doing. I could have used some input, right? Like, so I don't know. It's an interesting thing. So I have a theoretical question for you that is like, gonna sort of, it's on topic, but it's not gonna help you with your conundrum at work. But when it comes to leadership, do you think, because this is the fundamental question of leadership, do you think that it is people are naturally born leaders and that's just the way that they are born? Or do you think that it is something that can be taught? I have a real solid opinion on this, but I'm not gonna share mine until I hear yours.
Well, I'm going to talk this out because I don't know that I have an answer yet, but I'll probably have an opinion by the time I get to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you will. I have no doubt.
I think anyone can be taught to be a manager.
Okay. All right. But so I
because
would.
Because they're different.
Right. Because I would argue that those are two totally different.
I completely agree with you. They are fundamentally different things. And I think the skills involved in being a manager are about, largely at least, achievement and metrics.
Right.
So it's not
about people.
It's not about people. It's not about inspiration.
It's about end product.
I actually think leaders can be created or trained to a point. Mm-hmm. I think we have to kind of complicated a little bit in that there are different levels of leadership, and there's like senior leadership that's really about values and inspiration.
Right.
It's about mission. Mm-hmm. And then there's leadership about direction and confidence and kind of more localized buy-in, mm-hmm. whether it's in your department in a job or your local community, wherever. So I think managers can be created. I think leaders can be nurtured. Mm-hmm. But I guess I have to say there are some fundamental instincts about leadership that I'm not sure can be taught. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I am not convinced that you can really teach someone to like naturally and instinctively read a room. Uh-huh. Or read a conversation. Uh-huh. And I think that those are the kind of skills that are not optional when you're a leader. So I guess having talked through all of that, I think bad leaders can probably become or let's say mediocre leaders can be culled into great leaders, but I don't think bad leaders can be led into being mediocre leaders. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that's kind of exactly where I come from too, that it's sort of a
Yeah, I got it right.
Yeah, yes, because my opinion is the one that matters. I took like a whole class where we talked about this, right? But I think that's a conclusion that I've come to as well, is that it's a little bit of column A, a little column B, right? Like, I think if you have no skills, you know, for inherent leadership skills, like in who you are, I don't think you'll ever become a great leader or even a good leader, right? But I do think you don't have to be naturally born a good or great leader. I think as long as you have some base skills and then the others can be taught to you. But I think if you come to, if you come to leadership with no, like absolutely no natural skills of leadership, I don't think you're ever going to get there. I think you're always going to be falling short. So I think there's some natural things that you do have to kind of inherently have.
Like what?
I mean, I think I agree with you with like the being able to interact with other humans, you know, read a room, be able to sort of have that, that interaction. I think because I think if you can't interact with people, that's kind of fundamentally the difference between management and leadership, right? Management is not about people, where leadership is all of the pieces and parts of management plus people. I mean, I think it's, that's way oversimplified.
Oh yeah. But this is all completely oversimplified. Management is not about reducing people to cogs in a machine.
Right.
But
it sort of is. I mean, like, cause management, just straight up management with like, if you take, you're not often going to find situations where you're just a manager and no leadership is involved. I mean, I think
that's true.
I think there were times where that may have been true. I mean, I think my leadership degree is from an educational standpoint, right? And I think there was a period of time where schools were managed, not led. And so I think administration of buildings has gone from management to leadership over the course of time. So, but I think a lot of that shift is in talking about building capacity of people. It's that human resource piece that really is the key difference in my mind between management and leadership. But I do think people can fake the ability to interact with other people and to have empathy and to have that human resource element to their leadership. But I think it shows. Eventually people can see through that. So I think that's one of the things. I think that inspirational piece and being able to inspire people to follow you is sort of just a natural thing. Like, I don't know how you teach that. I think it can be strengthened. But I think if you don't have some sort of natural ability to kind of take a bit of control and be the guiding voice, I don't know that you will be able to learn that. And those are kind of sort of the fundamental things that I think you can be taught, you know, time management. I think you can be taught, you know, ways to build culture. And I think you can compensate for a lack of ability naturally in some of those regards. But I think there's got to be a little bit that's natural. And maybe it's not specific things that need to be natural, but maybe it's just a little bit has to be natural and it can't all be created.
That's probably fair. You know, this is a little unbaked, so, but it's like a thing I've been mulling around a lot. Like, so I'm in one of my extracurriculars, I'm kind of I've made it be known that I would like to move up the leadership ladder in my volunteer roles, and they've been receptive to that. And I've had a couple of opportunities to kind of play in the same space. And one of the things that has come up to me is that I've started really like giving more of a philosophical thought and eye to a lot of this work, basically, in terms of acting as a leader. And this isn't fully baked, but it's like some things I've started thinking about. It's like some of the things that I have seen the people that I deeply respect as leaders do. One, they focused on the vision, not the mission.
Okay.
Which I've come to appreciate is a lot harder.
So that like aspirational sort of thing.
So like when you're a manager, you're about a mission and there is an end and there is a success or failure.
And there are clear goals along the way.
And the thing about a vision is that largely, especially when you're talking about a vision statement, if you're getting really specific,
it's unformed.
It's either unformed or it's not achievable.
Okay.
So it's like, it's a vision that's so far aspirational that it's like, it's intentionally aspirational, not achievable, because you're trying to give people a place to reach to. Like, if you can ever achieve your vision, like, you need to seriously rethink your vision, you know, or change it. So that's one thing, is like shifting from a mission mindset to a vision mindset I thought would be easier than it was. And it's still something that I'm like intentionally and actively working on. And two, the other thing that I've noticed the leaders that I really respect to do is the second they get into position, they start looking for their replacement.
Oh, Okay. Right, so that they're not just a dictator.
They're like, I have a limited amount of time, and I'm going to make this place better than I found it. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've noticed a few of the people, especially in this volunteer organization that I'm a part of, I'm talking kind of in code for a reason, but this volunteer organization that I work with, some of the leaders that I've seen that are like really, really critically successful leaders, they've intentionally created two or three people behind them who can do what they do. I've been blessed to be one of them in both of these situations.
Right.
But it's like they're amplifying their action because one of their visions was to create an army of people like them. Mm-hmm. So that they can step back and say, you are my legacy. My vision is you are achieving
I think
vision,
that capacity building is huge in being a good leader. I think good leaders have confidence that they are not going to be challenged by other people. And so they intentionally build capacity within the ranks of people that they are leading because they understand that they're not going to be there forever and that the world should not revolve around them. Right. And
humility.
Right. And I think that's huge because I think every person who comes into a leadership role, and I've become a leader in various aspects, right, both professionally and personally. But I would never have stepped into any of those roles had I not been like, we'll put shoved as a nice gentle term, for probably what really happened, by other people, right, into those roles. And because I don't think sometimes people who become leaders anticipate, I think some people are born like knowing, but I think a lot of people get to that point at some point in their lives that someone is like, hey, you should do this thing. You'd be good at it. And then that starts to build capacity and confidence that your leadership could be of value. So I think capacity building is huge. And I think then that makes you respect your leader more. In a lot of ways.
It's definitely created a situation where I simultaneously feel like I've been set up for success mm-hmm. while also feeling like I have a understanding of the scale of what I'm stepping into. You know, so it's like, it's not like it's this little thing I volunteered for. Like, if I fuck this up, there are consequences.
Right.
Both personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. And these people who have groomed me as one of several successors to them are taking a risk on me, too. So it's like my actions reflect on them now. So, and it's like, even though I'm coming into several leadership roles, you know, I have people I'm still responsible to and people who I'm still trying to emulate. So I guess I guess that's another thing I would add to what makes a good leader is having another leader to aspire to be, mm-hmm. no matter how high you reach. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there are still people in my life who I aspire to be like them.
Right.
And I certainly hope that never changes. Because
I think if it does, then there's a problem.
Yes.
Right. Like, I think then you've gotten too big for your britches, if you will. Right.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Another cool thing about being a leader is, especially if you are a leader for a finite period of time, to be able to watch the people who come after you and see them build upon the work that you did is kind of a cool thing. Right. Like,
yeah.
To be like, okay, I set up the foundation for you to do a way better job. Right. Like after me. And then they set up a foundation for this next person to do an even better job beyond that. And to see that like, hey, the foundation I laid has led to this. Like, hey, maybe I could have gotten further. Cool. Like room for growth. But mm-hmm. like awesome that what I did set up, you know, future people to be able to do a better job is kind of fun. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Because like for me, I think I'm a firstborn. You know, we firstborns are frequently leaders for good or for ill. So, I mean, I think I've always sort of been a leader in a capacity, but I don't think I was ever really a true leader until I was an adult. But I think everybody kind of uses their leadership skills in a different way, right? Like, I think some really good leaders are serious all the time and they are respected for various reasons, but they are serious about what they're doing. That is not me. I've never been serious a day in my life. right? So my form of leadership is self-deprecation and like the acknowledgement that I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe not to that extent, but that there are other people that may have better suggestions and ideas that I would be happy to facilitate pushing forward, right? Yeah. That's my own personal leadership style. But sure. I think everybody kind of has to find their own thing. I find that self-deprecation, willingness to kind of get in the trenches with people, will usually get people to participate. I was going to say do what I want, but that's not really, it's not really accurate, but sort of.
You know, what the other part of this that I think, that I think it's interesting because I've had a lot of opportunity to do a lot of different things. And this is, again, I've been like a little bit more in the management space than the leadership space necessarily, but, I've never had an opportunity before I was like thrust into this leadership/management role to learn how to help people achieve what they want, mm-hmm. or to help people achieve their goals, mm-hmm. as long as it's aligned to what we need, you know, within the scope of what we're obligated to do, become who they want. So like I have about like 7 or 8 people who in some way, shape or form report to me, and I've had to like really invest time in thinking about what they want and how the work that we're doing is empowering them to achieve the next goals that they want. And they're all different. I have one that wants to go to grad school. I want one that wants to go back to research. I have one who is like, I want your job in 3 years. And I'm like, cool, because in 3 years I shouldn't be doing this job anymore. You mm-hmm. know, so it's like, it's things like that. It's like, it's so individualized on a human level. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I didn't appreciate how much investment of time and thought there needs to be into the people who are trusting you to lead them and the people who are trusting you to manage them. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think back to the good bosses that I had, mm-hmm. and think a little bit about, were there signs that they were doing that investment in me that I'd missed?
I mean, I think sometimes, yeah. Like, I think it's sometimes really subtle. I also think it's interesting because it can come from a lot of different places, right? So you can even ask Naomi. Like, when I first started teaching, I basically said, under no circumstances do I want to go into administration, like, for education. I never want to be an assistant principal. I don't want to be a principal. I have no interest. That sounds awful, right? And then what did I end up going to grad school for, right? Like, I went and got my admin 1 and 2 certificates, right? but I don't know that I did that because of things that happened at work. I mean, yes, like my capability and my capacities at work obviously led me to be able to do that. But I think it was really the leadership that I was thrust into at church that gave me the confidence to think, oh, I can actually be a leader of people. And then I applied that to work, right? Because even my old boss said, like, we were having a conversation when I first started grad school. She was like, I don't understand why you're going into leadership. Not that don't take that the wrong way. She didn't say it from like an insulting, I don't think you can be a leader perspective. But more like, I kind of feel like your passion is reading and maybe you should be getting your, you know, reading certificate so you can be a reading specialist. She changed her tune as I was in grad school, right? And was like, oh no, okay. Like, I think you made the right choice, right? Like, yeah. I understand it now. But yeah, so it's that push can come from a variety of places. Hmm. Because in leadership as an inherent thing is translatable across a lot of platforms. I think if I tried to go like to your organization and be a leader, right? Different. Like, I don't have the content knowledge to support that, right? Yeah. So there is an element of that, but like leadership is a fundamental thing. I think you can step into a lot of roles and have that because it's a lot of the same skills. Content knowledge is also important, but
sure, absolutely. I mean, this is all predicated on having some level of mm-hmm. of content knowledge to be, you know, credible to be there. But I actually think that's a really important point. Is that yeah? I think as you move up management and leadership change, content knowledge actually becomes less important.
Because if you're talking about vision and mission and you're higher up enough that you're just trying to direct the boat, you know?
Yeah.
and like, not doing the work on the boat, right? Absolutely. Like, you don't have to have as much content knowledge.
Exactly. So, like, the CEO of the company that I work for should not be capable of doing my job.
Right.
Nor is he. And that's fine because his job is fundamentally different.
I was going to say, but vice versa, right? Also not capable of doing his job.
Absolutely
and
not.
Probably appropriate.
That's right? Why you I'm know? Here and he's there. Right. And that's all fine. So it's just like, but I've just come to appreciate that, you know, it just feels like I'm constantly retraining as I'm moving through my career of like, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's an absolutely good thing. Like the things that you do should challenge you and make you grow mm-hmm. and change. But it's just interesting to me, the directions and spaces and ways that I've learned I have to grow are fundamentally different than what I thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not honestly sure there's any way to prepare someone for it. It's like, this is leadership to me seems to be one of those few things in life where
you
cannot predict, you cannot prepare. You have to jump in and be self-aware enough to learn the lessons.
Yeah. And I think like, and you've got to be open, right? Because leadership is now a fundamental theme through a lot of aspects of my life, like church work. And then now, you know, I've mentioned it a couple times on this podcast that the thought has entered my brain to go into politics in some way, shape, or form. And that's leadership in an entirely different, you know, capacity, you know, similar, but different.
Translatable skills, but right. Fundamentally different venue. But
yeah, exactly. So, and different content. Of which I may not have enough knowledge. But so it is sort of interesting how that can translate into various forms that I think sometimes we do only view leadership as being a professional skill, and it's not just a professional skill. It's important personally too, in all aspects. I'm going to lead this outro.
You do that.
I will lead it.
Lead okay. It hard. Wow, that just went to a weird that place. Went to, never mind.
I think to cut that. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Or I'll manage the crap out of this outro.
Speaking of managing, we manage our social media. That was a terrible transition.
Oh, that was bad.
I tried. If you have thoughts, you know what I want to hear? I want to hear your worst boss story.
Oh,
so
absolutely. That would be
I
amazing.
Love those stories. So you should share them on our Facebook page.
Don't like call out your boss on social media. I don't want to be responsible.
I mean, unless they're totally things. A tool, then that's fine.
okay, sure.
So just like make up a code name. Like Johan did this to me. Unless
Johan's your boss's name.
There you go. So on Facebook, we're at Wine with Friends. You can tweet at us at Wine Friends Pod.
You got it.
Give us your bad boss story. I want to hear it.
Yes, absolutely. We'd also like to thank our boy Lee.
Our boy Lee.
Lee Rosevere. for the music in this episode.
As always.
And we would like to thank all of our good bosses.
Absolutely.
You know who you are.
I miss you.
Mm-hmm.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
There's nothing better for your health than good sleep. That's why Haverty's Furniture has partnered with the Scott Brothers to offer Scott Living mattresses, now $250 off. Expect no pressure, just support from the Haverty Sleep Experts. Tap now or visit Haverty's.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 5000 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 5000. Enjoy!